This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, we make a difference. You know, we often hear about the covert stories that happen within our government, and you know, you hear little tidbits, and then you hear conspiracy thrown in, and then you hear war, and you hear conspiracy thrown in, and you hear Patriots Act, and nobody really knows what the Patriots Act is, but we hear conspiracy thrown in. And tonight we have a woman that has been the recipient of Extreme Prejudice, and that's the name of her book, Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Up of 9/11 in Iraq. Hello, Susan. Welcome to our show.
I'm delighted to be on. This is wonderful.
You were a U.S. intelligence asset, Susan, weren't you?
Well, all through the time, through the Clinton administration, while the sanctions were in play, and while the American people had no knowledge of this was covert on our end, I was actually in functioning as a back channel to the Iraqi and Libyan governments at the United Nations. And we were working to try to solve different problems, or at least to make sure that terrorism did not flare up and did not become an issue in the sanctions.
And as an asset, you know, I often, this is something, Susan, that I've often said about the people that we hire to do the job that we, and when we hire these people, we consider them to be quite adequate, we consider them to be quite intelligent, we consider them to be quite capable of finishing the job and doing the job, and then suddenly we tried to make them look like baboons.
Yes. It is a very unhappy situation for an asset, because we are out there trying to solve problems that politicians have declared to be their great priorities, and yet these are very difficult problems. They're very, 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 very hard to solve. And my work was heavily supervised by both the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. Unusually, the Libyan and Iraqi governments were both informed of my role as an asset, and that I function, and that I would be available as a back channel to Washington. So on their end, it was not covert, and that's very important to understand. But what happens is that the assets then frequently get blamed when things go wrong for the politicians. So the politicians make the mistakes, the assets go in to fix it, and then if the politicians cannot get out of their trouble, they blame the assets, and it's very frustrating.
Well,
to put it mildly.
It sounds like that's pretty norm for the course. But let me ask you, it didn't end there for you, did it, Susan?
No, in my situation, and I have to underscore this point. The CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency watched me extremely closely. I was never turned loose on to deal with Libya by myself or deal with Iraq by myself. You can only imagine these were two pariah nations. They were considered hostile to the United States, potential war zones. No one was going to allow any American do-gooder, no matter how well-intentioned, to just go and just play with these countries' governments. Everything was controlled, and the instruction, and that means that there were constant instructions coming through I would have meet about once every 3 weeks with the Iraqis and the Libyans, and then I'd meet every single week with both the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency, every single week. So there was never any, you know, there was constant feedback coming through. But in my case, after all of that, and it turned out to be about 150 meetings with the Libyans and the Iraqis each, and about 700 to 800 meetings with the American side. After all of that, I had protested the war in Iraq, and I got arrested on the Patriot Act 30 days after I approached the offices of Senator John McCain and Senator Trent Lott, requesting to testify on Capitol Hill about the real story of Iraqi pre-war intelligence. I was actually there in the room dealing with the Iraqi ambassador and the Iraqi diplomats, and I had a better perspective than anyone else, and I told them I wanted to talk to Congress about this. And when I made the request, I thought that perhaps that what worried me was that I might be forced to give a closed-door testimony, and that the American people would not get to hear the truth because they would force me to do it behind closed doors. And little did I know, little did I expect, that in fact, that as soon as they heard I wanted to testify, they arranged to have me arrested. And 30 days later, I woke to hear the FBI pounding on my door with an arrest warrant. And for the next 5 years, I was held under indictment on the Patriot Act as an accused Iraqi agent. And that's why I emphasized, you know, the heavy controls by the CIA, because in the end, when they came to arrest me, they accused me of working for the other side, which was just ludicrous.
And during the time that you were in prison, you were actually arrested and in prison for over a year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I was. I was free on bail of $500,000. And then one day, I was summoned to court, and I was told by my attorney that he had no idea why I was going to court. The judge wanted to get us all together, and we just presumed they were going to try to push me into a plea bargain. But I showed up in court as ordered, and I was told that I was going to, it had been decided that I was going to surrender to prison on a Texas military base. And if I resisted this, if I asked for a hearing, which is my right under the law, there was no guilty plea, no trial. I was told that if I requested a hearing to debate this question of going to prison, then I would be seized immediately and I would forfeit my bail through the end of the proceedings, which could be indefinitely. You know, this could go on for a long, you know, we'd already, you know, this could go on for years. Is that you will never have another, but you will never get bail again if you don't do this. And they said, but if you agree to surrender to prison, then you may have a hearing after you serve your prison sentence.
Let me ask you something, Susan. Why do you believe that you were arrested?
Because I had information for several reasons. My team had given advance warning about 9/11, and we had done we had covered Iraq's contribution to the 9/11 investigation, which was very different than what you had been told. You see, part of the problem for the Bush administration was that Bill Clinton had actually done a superior job on anti-terrorism, albeit the people didn't know. I mean, this was the prerogative of the government to keep this stuff quiet and handle it covertly. But the Iraqi government had been one of our best sources on anti-terrorism throughout the 1990s. Saddam Hussein hated Islamic fundamentalists and presumed that eventually they would become terrorists. He was very worried that they would try to take advantage of the desperate poverty of the Iraqi people under sanctions, and that they would foment some sort of rebellion against his government and establish some sort of Islamic government in his place. So he watched them ferociously. I mean, this is one thing that was true about Saddam. So before 9/11, Iraq had offered to allow the FBI to establish a task force in the country with authorization to conduct terrorism investigations and to make arrests of terror suspects. And after 9/11, they offered us something of critical value if we were serious about anti-terrorism. They offered to give us financial documents on al-Qaeda figures, including Ramzi Youssef, who was the mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center attack. And Ramzi mm-hmm. Youssef had meetings in the Philippines with Terry Nichols, who was involved in Oklahoma City. And so the Iraqis declared that they would give us these financial records and they would prove a Middle Eastern link to the Oklahoma City bombing. And so this was very dynamic stuff. And it would have helped break the financial pipeline that feeds terrorism, which is founded on heroin trafficking. Again, most people don't understand the relationship that the money from terrorism is coming from a source. It is coming from poppy production and heroin trafficking on a global scale. And you know, we like to think of the way Americans perceive Islamic terrorism is that these are religious people, but in fact they are. Religion has these are killers. The real terrorists really don't have a religious philosophy of any kind. They are motivated just by sheer hatred. And there are some Islamic terrorists, yes, but there are very few. We have exaggerated terrorism so much in our society, and we've been led to believe that, you know, that there are every Islamic young man is a potential terrorist. And that's just an outright, it's ridiculous. When I first started doing this, there were 200 to 300 terrorists worldwide of all nationalities. And now there's probably 3,000 to 5,000 terrorists worldwide, real terrorists who are out to get you, who really would like to tear down any symbol of American preeminence they can. Most people are just freedom fighters. They just want to get the United States out of their countries. But they're not going to come over here and bother us.
They're not so tough. And we have gangs in Chicago that are probably worse than them.
Yes. But you could fill a small high school auditorium. You could not fill a high school auditorium with the number of terrorists in the whole world.
Exactly. And that does not surprise me at all. From all of the information that I've gathered from doing this show, from interviewing incredible people like such as yourself. But let me ask you something here. So we have a complete distortion of the truth, a complete distortion of the evidence that was presented about going to war with Iraq. In fact, from your statements, the Iraqis were actually working with us to end terrorism, to end the connections of terrorism, and to bring forth to justice the terrorists that they, in fact, were as afraid of as we seem to be.
Yes.
Now, when
yes,
you
that
said that, you got
true.
Arrested. And you got arrested for that, and you were indicted but never tried. You asked for trial. You never got it. To this day, you
that
have not
correct.
Received a fair
In
trial.
5 years of indictment, I was allowed to have one morning of evidentiary testimony with two witnesses. And in those two witnesses, Basma, the first witness confirmed that she had direct knowledge of my relationship with my defense intelligence handler, Paul Hoven. And she said, yes, absolutely. We knew that we always knew Paul was intelligence, and he had a very tight relationship with Susan Lindauer. We knew that they were doing some secretive work together involving Libya and Iraq. And then the second witness came on and said, Susan Lindauer told me about 9/11 in the spring and summer of 2001. And as soon as that testimony came out, they're like, no more testimony for you. You are not getting a trial. There is no way we're going to let you have a trial.
Tell us about what, do you believe, and this is a question that a lot of people want to know, do you believe that 9/11 was an inside job?
Absolutely. The thing is, for me, Basma, I have ached for years watching all of you debate this question, because for me it's so, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's so simple. You know, it is such a simple matter. The answer is, yes, we did expect 9/11 to happen. I was told about 9/11 in April and May of 2001, and very importantly, I was commanded to threaten the Iraqi government with war if 9/11 happened, and I was supposed to demand that the Iraqis must give us any fragment of intelligence that would help us pinpoint the conspiracy to hijack airplanes and bomb the world and attack and fly the airplanes over the water into the World Trade Center. We knew exactly what was going to happen. We were prepped in advance to expect that once that conspiracy was played out, then there would be war with Iraq. And I was told to tell the Iraqis in April and May of 2001, this was the first time, it's almost funny if you have a really black sense of humor. The first time I was very polite, my CIA handler summoned me to his office and said, I want you to go deliver this message to the Iraqis. And I went and I was very polite and I said, gee, if you hear of anything, could you let us know? And I went back to him and he said, so what did they say? And I said, well, you know, I asked them to pass the message on through back channels and they'll get us anything if they hear anything. He said, I didn't ask you to do that. I told you to blankety, 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 the FFFFF, blankety, 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 screaming, circling me up and down the conference room, around the table, yelling about all the things I was supposed to say to the Iraqis. And he said, I want you to go back. I want you to tell them the message exactly as I just told it to you. And I want you to tell them that the threat comes from the highest level of government above the CIA director and above the Secretary of State. And that is exactly how he put it. He did not use the words George Bush and Dick Cheney, but who else is above the Secretary of State? And in May of 2001, they were emphatic exactly who was threatening the Iraqis. It was George Bush and Dick Cheney.
They knew several months before.
Months before.
And now, let me ask you, they wanted the Iraqis to turn them over, to turn intelligence over? The Iraqis were helping as far as that anyway, weren't they not?
Well, see, this is a very important point. The Iraqis had some of the best intelligence on terrorism in the Middle East. I mean, Saddam, if it was available, Saddam would have gotten it.
Exactly.
But what was happening during that period was the Iraqis were trying to get the sanctions lifted. Internationally, the loathing of sanctions had reached a point where the sanctions were breaking. I hated the sanctions. I was an anti-sanctions activist. So I was trying to do everything in my power to help make this happen, to help achieve what the United States needed in order to let go of the sanctions. So at that point, the CIA, I was helping the CIA, I was fulfilling my role as a back channel, trying to help the CIA get everything that they could identify that they could demand from the Iraqi government. And I was taking that to the Iraqi government saying, we want this, 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 this. So in a sense, the 9/11 stuff was part of that whole demand.
There is a question that we're getting from one of our techs.
Please.
And a gentleman is asking if, in fact, it was an inside job. How could the Iraqis help us stop an inside job?
Exactly. Yes. 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 But that's what's called deny. Your good question. It's called deniability. What we did was we knew the Iraqis had nothing to give us, but it gave the United States a pretext to threaten Iraq.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You see,
I was trying to figure out where
Iraq was.
They needed to get into Iraq.
And the whole time, the Iraqis were saying, "Look, you know, if and I would go, what I would do is, but it's a very good question. I would go to the Iraqis and I'd sit in the embassy and I'd say, look, you know, here we have this peace framework that we're building up, which is really great, and you will ruin our peace framework if you do not give us intelligence, any fragment of intelligence, on this attack." And the Iraqis were like, and I said, you know, you got to send this message back to Baghdad. You know, the United States is demanding that any intelligence you get on a conspiracy involving airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center, any such intelligence you have to give to us. Otherwise, the United States is threatening you with war. And so what was happening was the Bush administration, at the top of the Bush administration, was prepping the intelligence community to expect war as a result of the 9/11 attack. At the same time, and this is so important, the threat of war and the advanced knowledge created a combined
hysteria.
Okay? And so it provided motive and opportunity for somebody else, for a second team. And the thing is, its intelligence is not monolithic. It's based on teams. For it provided a second motivation and opportunity for a second team to go in and wire the World Trade Center with explosives for demolition. Because they knew that the problem was everybody knew that an airplane striking the building would be dramatic. It would be excitement. There'd be people running around screaming, and the TV cameras would get all excited. But at the end of the day, there would be no catastrophe. There would be no calamity. It would not be dramatic enough to justify the goal of going to war with Iraq. So if they wanted to really achieve that goal, and what you have to, and the reason my book and my revelations are so important is because for the first time you can understand that this was known for months in advance. There was advanced planning and advanced knowledge of this and advanced threats. And so everyone knew that if they could just get this thing to maximize the detonation impact, then they could force the United States into war with Iraq. You see, they could overcome that international resistance. And so what I have been told, and all the stuff I've told you is firsthand knowledge. It's what I said to the Iraqi diplomats and what they said to me. But right now I'm going to tell you that in the third week of August, I am told by a different source that between 3 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the morning, for about 10 days, strange trucks were seen entering the World Trade Center, and this was apparently captured on video camera, okay? They know what the trucks looked like. They know the make, the model, the color, the design of the vans, which means it was on videotape. And they know that they are not the same as the janitorial trucks, okay? They know that these trucks had never come into the World Trade Center until this period, right at the end. It wasn't like they were coming in from like January on. This was for like a 10-day period right before the attack, and it ended approximately September 3rd, September 4th.
Susan, you're saying that it takes team effort to perpetrate something like this. Who teamed up with the United States?
I'm sorry?
Who teamed up with the United States?
Well, now, I will tell you that we know that the Israeli government had knowledge of 9/11. They had a Mossad team out on the sidewalk ready to capture the airplanes flying over the water striking the World Trade Center. Those were Mossad agents, and they were already there on site with their cameras queued up ready to go. They were not tourists, as they pretended on CNN. They were actual Mossad agents. Does that mean that it was the Mossad that wired the building? I do not know. I cannot say. But I know that the building was wired, and it's not just a question of feeling it in my gut. The building was wired. The building was wired, and we absolutely had, and there was a motive and opportunity for the wiring, and it certainly does appear that the people who had the most to gain from blowing up the World Trade Center was the government of Israel. And that's a fact. And if you look at who benefits from this war, it's certainly not the American people who benefited from it. It was the Israeli government that benefited from it. And that doesn't mean that Jews are bad. It's not an anti-Jewish statement. Some people get upset and they're like, oh, that's an anti-Semitic thing to say. No, it is a realistic thing to say. It is foreign policy. Israel was advancing its own foreign policy interests. And they're not in it for us. They're in it for themselves. And we need to start remembering that.
And now what, Susan? Is telling the story making an impact, making the impact that you would like to see it make?
Well, I'll tell you something. I think that the real thing that we have to know is that diplomacy, what has surprised me is the deep resistance by the corporate media to telling this story. I think that the American people really want to know. I think they're really angry, I don't think that it's healthy for us to be so enraged. Our government has really betrayed us. When you see something like the Patriot Act, the cover-up of 9/11 in Iraq was so ugly. And these people are cycling back around into power again. My prosecutor worked for John McCain and Sarah Palin at election time. And I was arrested after I contacted the offices of Senator John McCain and Trent Lott asking to testify. When the campaign season came around, my prosecutor left the Justice Department to go work for John McCain and Sarah Palin. So I think that what we have to do is we have to end the war on terrorism. We have to realize we did this to ourselves, and we have got to stop thinking that there's some external enemy out there that's out to get us. We did this to we got ourselves. We are the boogeyman. And I think that if we that we are damaging ourselves, we are bankrupting our country. We are not helping our military soldiers. If you're out there and you care about the United States military, or if you're a peace activist, or if you're pro-Arab or pro-Islamic, all of these groups are equally damaged by what's happened. And we are at a point where we're at a turning point in our country where if we don't stop this phony war on terrorism, if we don't really examine this thing and pull out of these wars in these foreign countries, we're going to ruin our country. We're going to lose our preeminence, and we will not be the superpower that gets to dictate all good for the world. We've squandered it.
We have so much more to talk about. We're going to be taking a short break right now. And when we return, we'll be talking to Susan Lindauer further on really an incredible story, Susan. And I applaud you from the bottom of my heart for coming up with the truth and being such a brave American and a patriot to our country. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks, on the People Speak Radio with Susan Lindauer.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Hey, Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to EarthShare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Forever Fresh Disposable Undergarments offers a convenient, economic option to men and women who suffer from minor incontinence. Forever Fresh is a patented, internationally award-winning brand that allows the skin to breathe as naturally and comfortably as cotton garments. Environmentally friendly and hypoallergenic, the undergarment features a built-in incontinent pad pocket to be used when extra absorbency is needed. Forever Fresh is available at participating Walgreens. To learn more, you may also visit foreverfresh.com.
This land is your land. This land is mine.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, here on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of The People Speak Radio. Here, when The People Speak, we make a difference. Tonight, the person that's speaking is Susan Lindauer, author of Extreme Prejudice, the Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 in Iraq. We've gone through a lot of the events of 9/11. We've talked about Iraq. Tell me about the Patriots Act and why Americans need to be very, very afraid of the Patriots Act, Susan.
There's one last thing that I need to say about the 9/11 stuff, because people and Iraq. I must emphasize to you that what I'm telling you is what I did myself. I am not telling you what somebody told me they did or heard about. I'm telling you what I know directly. And some people have, you know, on the question of Israel, I know that Israel had advanced knowledge of that attack. I know that. Some people would like me to go farther and say that Israel planned 9/11. And an asset, I have to caution all of you, and I have to explain some of you, an asset is supposed to provide first-hand observations of what they see, feel, touch, experience directly. And it's very compartmentalized, but it's also something that you're trained to do. You're trained to distinguish that what the experiences that you have directly with what other people have. And so some people get a little frustrated with that. But that is something that is part of my training, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I always distinguish what I know and what other people have told me. Okay, sorry about that.
Thank you.
Now, the Patriot Act, sorry about that. The Patriot Act is the most dangerous law that has ever been passed in the United States. And that's not an exaggeration, Basima. The Patriot Act is almost verbatim what the Bolshevik Communist Criminal Act in 1929 that laid the foundation for communism, the Soviet apparatus and the controls over the people. It is also almost identical to the 1933 enabling law in Germany, Nazi Germany, that set up the Nazi apparatchik for controlling the people and fascism, Nazi fascism. So you have Soviet fascism in 1929, you have Nazi fascism in 1933, and you have the Patriot Act, which are all almost identical laws, verbatim laws, that they've taken the code directly from the Nazis. They've taken code, legal code, directly from the Soviet Union, the communists, people, and they've put this into the United States of America. And I believe that it is patriotic and necessary to our society, necessary to the freedom of our society, for all of us to stand up and fight this thing. They have just passed three surveillance provisions that were set to end last week, and they've extended them for four more years. And these are roving surveillance. They don't need a warrant from a judge. They don't need any sort of authorization from a judge. They can move they can follow you anywhere they want to go, in any situation that they want to get you in. And a lot of people think that this is only targeting terrorism and it's only targeting foreign communications. But I want you all to know that in my home state of Maryland, state police invoked the Patriot Act to run surveillance on the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, which is dedicated to wind power, recycling, and protection of the Chesapeake Bay. They went after the D.C. anti-war network, pretending that they might be a front for white supremacists. And they went after Amnesty International, claiming to investigate civil rights abuses. Opponents of the death penalty got targeted on the Patriot Act, citing a potential for future violence. Okay, now, anti-death penalty, are these people going to be violent? Are they going to be plotting to blow things up if they're anti-death penalty? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't. But it's very important to understand that this is not a law. The law is sold to us as an anti-terrorism law, so it lulls us into obedience. We're acquiescent. We agree. We're like, okay, we'll accept that because we want to get those terrorists. They're going to disrupt our life. But really, what they're going after are the activists, the dissidents, the whistleblowers, people who threaten the comfort of the government, people who are going to expose government corruption. Those are the people who are being harassed.
Well, you know, not only are they being harassed, but the Patriots Act has stripped them of their rights. I believe it's also the cause of the stripping of the Bill of Rights that is the main staple of our Constitution here in the United States. I know that the Tea Party
That's true. The Patriot Act, we think of surveillance. When you think of the Patriot Act, you think of roving wiretaps and warrantless searches. But the Patriot mm-hmm. Act is also secret charges, secret mm-hmm. evidence, secret grand jury testimony. Now mm-hmm. think about that. Think about what that includes. You're not allowed to know what you are accused of doing. The government is not required to show evidence that you actually did it or that it rises to the level of a crime. They're not required to give you a date that it happened on. They're not required to tell you the city that it happened in. They just say sometime in the month of October, something happened, but we're not going to tell you what it is. And I know that because I went through it. Okay? It is, my rights were stripped away. I lost my, I was the second non-Arab American ever indicted on the Patriot Act. By the time it was over, I had, my First Amendment right to freedom of speech and freedom of religion was gone. My Fourth Amendment rights for warrantless searches was gone. My Fifth Amendment rights not to incriminate myself was, I was forced to give testimony whether I wanted to or not. My Sixth Amendment rights to a speedy trial, and I believe my Eighth and Tenth Amendment rights were also taken away. My rights to face my accusers in a court of law and not to face political prosecutions.
And there you have the Bill of Rights. There you have the entire
Pretty
Bill of Rights.
The whole Bill of Rights was gone.
Exactly. We have some questions, Mary, from some of our listeners. Mike in California asks, I've heard that a CIA is head of the Libyan rebels. Is this more dirty work by the U.S. government?
Yes. Yes. A head of the CIA, someone who's been living in Virginia for like 20 years or 30 years, has gone to Libya to run the Libyan rebels. The Libyan rebels are a new Taliban. They are Islamic fundamentalists. Darna, which is in the eastern part of Libya, has been the number one source of foreign fighters in Iraq and Afghanistan. They've been in Chechnya, the Balkans. They've been in conflicts wherever there's jihad. These are the people who the United States has now embraced in the Libyan resistance. It's very unclear why they're doing this, because Gaddafi, for all of, everybody loves to hate Gaddafi, and everybody loves to ridicule Gaddafi. They say, you know, wacky Gaddafi. But Gaddafi is actually an extremely brilliant man. He's cunning, he's shrewd, he's tough as nails. You are not going to get him out of there. He is not going to go alive. He will never leave power. And so it's like NATO has totally failed to grasp who they're dealing with. Libya has over 2,000 tribes, 2,000 tribes, okay? And these are family clans, and they have long feudal memories. You know, their feuds between the families that go back generations. And they're based on Bedouin camps that have evolved into a more urban setting.
I know that for one of the things that we heard a lot on Arabic television and news broadcasting in the media in the Arab world, we heard that what was really happening was that the American and NATO coalition was destroying the military for future occupation of that region. And that's what it looks like.
It's even dirtier than that. I mean, they're bombing schools, they're using drones, they've been bombing hospitals, they're bombing civilian sites. I hate to tell you this, but the rebels that we have embraced are not great young men. They have been, their stories, because I covered Libya, I am approached by people who have traveled, Westerners who've been traveling in Libya, and a fact-finding team had come back from having a meeting where male family members informed them of the rapes and brutal murders of their daughters. Apparently the rebels have been chasing down families that support Gaddafi and you know, terrorizing these people, and they're just trying to live their lives and just, you know, stay out of the way. but they're going after the quote virgins, and so they go and they raid homes where there are virgins, and they take the virgins and they rape them, and then they do awful things. That while they're still alive, and they've been, you know, these are, you know, these are Islamic women who are very, very modest.
They're war crimes,
and
they
are cutting off their breasts. Apparently.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, this is testimony from, this is not what Gaddafi's people are doing. This is what the rebels are doing. And they're cutting off the breasts of these women while they're still alive. And of course, then they bleed to death. And they put the breasts into, the women's breasts into, in the town square, in like the shapes of figures. You know, like they lay something out like a cartoon on the sidewalk
for the
word of a whore. Like they spell out the word of a whore. And it's just ugliness. And it's these are terror tactics to intimidate the Libyan people. And it's definitely working. But this is who the United States has been supporting. And, you know, these are the people who I have spoken with. Who are Westerners who've told me this, and they believe it. They think that it is true, and they're not dumb people. They're pretty savvy people. And if this was just propaganda, they would, you know. But they're hearing from the people from family members who have survived these raids, and that's the problem. It's common in this culture.
What I am really concerned about is there was this incredible uprising in the Arab world, which I don't believe was an accident. For months and months before the attack on Iraq, Rumsfeld was constantly, and I only call him Rumsfeld because I won't give him the dignity of the first name. that guy just gives me the willies. But anyway, he kept denying that they wanted to destabilize the Middle East, which was a myth right there and then, because what they were doing was in fact destabilizing the Middle East, and most of the people in the Middle East knew this. And yes. 3 days after the attack on Iraq, when asked exactly the same question, and I was very, very concentrated on some of the statements that Rumsfeld made during that period of time, and he said, and he was asked, do you think this war will destabilize the Middle East? And he says, we must destabilize the Middle East. And then he literally named every Middle Eastern nation, the last one being, and in the end, we also have to destabilize and change regimes in Saudi Arabia. So he didn't leave anybody out. And if the Saudis think they're getting away with anything, they certainly aren't. And so I do not believe that any of this was an accident, but my concern is that they have taken a clandestine uprising that, for all intents and purposes, could have turned into an incredibly valuable tool for democratizing the Middle East, or at least enhancing a secular forms of government.
Yes.
And they're turning it into some madness.
Tragic.
It's a tragedy. It is, and I hate for these things to be happening, not just because I hate for these things to be happening, but also at the connotations of what and the changes that they enforce on a pure and pristine revolution.
Yes. And I think that I suspect that the United States gave technical guidance to these organizers without just thinking that they were going to overturn the system and throw out, and the young people would rise up and they would embrace the West. And if they could just get rid of the old, the new would be embracing America. But of course, it's more complicated than that. You know?
Absolutely.
And democracy in the Middle East is not the same as democracy in the West. And they don't have the same goals for using democracy that we have here. And in fact, I have been very concerned that in Egypt, where, you know, this was supposed to be, you know, the Tahrir Square was, you know, it was a great hope, and it was not a violent revolution, and Mubarak did step down, and that was all very good. I was very glad to see all of that happen. Mm-hmm. But what's happened is the military has taken over, and now they're doing, you know, you hear these stories about virginity tests on demonstrators and
oh,
you know, the media's focus has now shifted. And they're not really covering the fact that this revolution is still going on, and that the new military forces are being perhaps even more repressive than Mubarak's regime was. And if there are elections in the future, then that's a very hopeful thing. But will the military let go? I don't know.
We don't know. I guess we won't ever know, or at least until it unfolds in front of us. Extreme Prejudice, the terrifying story of the Patriot Act and the cover-ups of 9/11 in Iraq. This book by Susan Landauer is on Amazon.com. Susan, what is the website so that we can have more people?
ExtremePrejudiceUSA.wordpress.com.
You can get it on our site. Our website has all of this information on it. So please visit our site, get the book. It's an incredible book. It is the truth, and we need to. I think it's time that we stop denying the truth. Thank you very much, Susan, for being our guest tonight. We hope to have you on soon. We wish you well in your endeavors, and again, I applaud you as a great American.
Thank you so much, Basima. Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Next week, Ariel Vagosen of Code Pink and MoveOverAPEC.org. Thank you all for joining us tonight. And until we meet next, let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office at Summer People. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.